This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. Today, we'll learn about a new interactive play. We'll hear how a frontline worker's life has changed since receiving the COVID-19 vaccine. We'll tell you about five things you can do in the city this month and how you can explore the Milwaukee Public Museum virtually. We'll start with the historic battle Black women are continuing to fight, challenging racism and misogyny, demanding equality and justice. These themes are what drive poet Shireen Sherard's work. In her collection called Grimoire, the UW-Madison English professor explores the life and recipes of Melinda Russell, the first known Black woman to publish a cookbook. Sherard intertwines her work with the perspective of a modern Black female narrator. Sherard spoke to WUWM's Mayon Silver about her work, starting with what inspires her.
I'm really inspired by history, especially African-American history. And so a lot of my poems seek to engage or recover or explore voices that might have been stifled, especially during like the 19th century under slavery, but also just anything that really strikes my fancy. You know, I write a lot about food and about the places that I visit and also about my family.
So your most recent collection mixed the recipes of Melinda Russell, the first African-American to publish a cookbook, with narration from contemporary Black mother and amateur cook. Can you tell me a little bit about Russell and why you chose, is it pronounced Grimoire?
Grimoire. Yes, I can talk about the title and also, I encountered Melinda Russell's cookbook in a collection of Black culinary history by an author. Her name is Toni Tipton Martin, and she's a culinary historian. And when I discovered this cookbook, I was just struck by how the recipes themselves were like poems. And I was also just, you know, in awe of the fact that a woman living at the time that she did, she was a free woman, but, you know, living through the Civil War, decided that she would produce, you know, her own cookbook in her own words as a method of support for herself. And she also had a disabled son. And so that struck a chord with me, this idea of a single mother producing her own cookbook. And from there, I envisioned the book as a dialogue in some way. And I wanted it to be a book that would think about the process of making in terms of food and preparation, but also in terms of what it takes to bring up a Black child in the world that we live in now.
And why was it important to connect a modern Black woman with her ancestors?
I think it's just a sense of continuity, right? I think a lot of the poems in the book talk about what is inherited. Trauma is one of the things that's inherited, and several of the poems talk about that. But we also pass down survival skills. And that's one of the things that that kind of advice or the things that might sustain us, that's something I also wanted to focus on. And the title also comes from that as well. So Grimoire is an archaic name for a magical textbook. And so this is the kind of book that alchemists would use to write down spells, but they often wrote them in the form of receipts or what we would know as recipes. And so that word recipe and receipt was often interspersed or used, you know, to describe instructions for a variety of different things. And that's part of why I liked that as a title, the combination of something that might be recipes for dishes and food, but also for advice and cures and other kinds of things to remember.
Well, one of the poems that you've brought to read today is called Restoring the Hair to Its Original Color, and that kind of plays a little bit on that receipt recipe idea. Would you be able to read that one for us?
Sure, yeah, I'm happy to do that. So several of the poems, again, engage or draw on language from Melinda Russell's recipe. So you'll hear at the end of this poem some lines that are actually from a recipe that's in her book that has the same title, Restoring the Hair to Its Original Color.
They don't tell you how it will age you, the lack of sleep, the cracked nipples, the constant buzzing and running hither and thither. When he was born, my son's hair was black and slick. As he grew, it curled, then bronzed like his father's. What started as a silver streak over my left temple spread like a platinum coronet. I dare you to combine 2 drams of lac sulfurous with 8 ounces of rose water. Shake thoroughly. Apply every night before bed.
This poem sort of contrasts the youth of the baby and its hair with the aging impacts of sort of childbearing on the mother. And then if we could just look at a little bit the clever discussion at the end, lac sulfurous. I had to look it up. It's used for treating skin diseases, not necessarily gray hair, but maybe there's hope if you add rose water. Ha ha ha. So, yeah.
Reading some of these recipes, you know, she would have recipes in there like to make magic oil or, you know, to cure warts, you know, and, you know, some of them do have the cores of herbalism or a kind of midwives apothecary. And some of these things we still do use, you know, things like raspberry leaf tea, you know, for hormonal balance. So some of that stuff is, are remedies that you might use, but others like this, that's why I have that whole note there about, I dare you to do this because I don't know. I have a highly doubt that this would produce the desired result.
Right. And, you know, it must have been kind of fun looking through those and kind of taking a modern perspective on them a little bit.
It was. I mean, I actually tried to cook. I cooked quite a few of the recipes, making adjustments along the way, kind of like my own version of that book by Julie Powell, Julia and Julia. I don't know if you remember. It was a
yes, there was
film.
A movie, right?
Yeah, I really liked that idea, you know, of the dialogue between the two. That's the other reason that I pair the speaker as a 21st century mother and a 19th century mother. I like this idea of this dialogue, but across, you know, 2 centuries, but both single mothers, both very concerned with the care of their child.
That's a theme that you have throughout Grimoire, is the idea of ancestral knowledge and on the exploration of Black motherhood. February is actually Black History Month. How does your poetry connect you to your ancestors and the importance of mothers in Black history?
Well, the first part of Grimoire, you know, is this dialogue with, you know, a Black mother, right, from the 19th century, who you know, just did some amazing things. But I think the more contemporary part of Grimoire, and the second section in particular, looks at health disparities in terms of birth outcomes for Black women and how drastic the difference is in the rates of both infant mortality, but also just you know, survival, right, and flourishing after birth as well. And that was, I would say, somewhat of an unexpected connection that the second section of the book dealt with. And it really came from me reading an article by Linda Villarosa in the New York Times that talked about how the mortality rates were better under slavery when Black women were forced to reproduce a labor force, not under their own, you know, volition, than they are now. And that was just a really striking note for me to realize, and those health disparities I think have only increased under the pandemic.
And you've brought another poem that sort of is in that similar vein and similar context called Weathering. Would you be able to read that one?
Sure. Yeah. So weathering is a term by a public health advocate named Arlene Geronimus, and it just speaks about the ways in which exposure to systemic racism and other kinds of environmental toxins can actually be passed down through the DNA, right? Not just metaphorically, but actually changing the health outcomes for women and their children. And so thinking about the trauma that enslaved women experienced and the fact that along with everything else, that's something that can be passed down. And that's what this poem, Weathering, gets at.
None of us in the prenatal clinic are the right age. We are climbing or descending the bell curve. The 18 to 35-year-olds are still at happy hour. They spend their petty cash on pedicures. Think of your shoelace, the genetic counselor says, benignly. The plastic tip that keeps the cotton from unraveling. That's the telomere. It protects your legacy. In your people, it has come off, peeled away like a chimney from an F4 twister by a toxicity that seeps and creeps until your womb is all black mold in need of remediation. All you glean from this prognosis, please strap yourself into the stirrups. An audience of white coats anticipates. This silence is for saving lives that matter, not salvaging slaves. A nurse secures the shackles as a surgeon lifts your paper gown to expose one breast. He whispers what Cassiopeia must have said to sturdy Andromeda before leaving her for the Kraken. Be not afeard. After this last trial, you will be magnified, astral, a consolation.
And the last word, a consolation, it seems almost like there could have been an implication that you would have said constellation, but then it's like people who are going through these things end up needing to be consoled. Is there anything else that you would want to unpack, maybe a little bit about the mythology?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted the movement in the poem to go from this, you know, idea of the speaker being in a clinic, right? And the idea of being a prenatal or a birthing clinic. And I remember, you know, going to those places in my mid-20s or mid-30s and thinking that, you know, that's really the ideal time, right, to have a child, right? So this notion that you don't want to be too young a mother, and then as you're older, right? So this, there's this fear as you get older that the health, right? The eggs are, you're losing eggs. You know, there's all of this anxiety that goes into procreation for women and trying to balance childbearing, child rearing, all of these things with career and family. So I wanted to capture that, and also just the intensity that, the specific intensity that Black women experience moving into those spaces and not necessarily being treated with the same care or seen in the same way. Also, there's an undercurrent there when they say, you know, this science isn't for salvaging slaves. What we know about the history of obstetrics is that a lot of the tools that were developed in this field were basically tested out on enslaved women, right? So there's also, I think, this deep fear and distrust of medicine that's running through this, in the sense of someone being sacrificed, right, for the good of another person. And that's why I think there's the turn, you know, towards the classical, that image of Andromeda being sacrificed by her mother, right? And, but then you're right. Yeah, I think at one point that I think of, you know, the constellations, right? You know, there's this idea that your reward is in the heavens, right? Which is also, you know, a bit of tongue in cheek there to ask people to look to the afterlife as opposed to the present.
And this, the image of the telomere shortening and peeling away like a chimney in an F4 twister, that's very powerful. And there was a study out of Auburn University that African Americans who reported more racial discrimination over a 10-year period showed signs of faster aging at the cellular level during that time frame. Were you alluding to that too?
Exactly, right. And also the fact that this is something that cuts across class, because a lot of times we'll think, oh, well, you know, if people have maybe more education or they have more money or something like that, that these are going to abate these issues. But in fact, there's a lot of evidence to say they're in, you know, it's maybe a different degree, but there is that intensity still maintains, and that the birth count outcomes from the research I've looked at are actually better for younger mothers because there's just been less time that they've been exposed, right? It's not like they haven't experienced racism. It's just that there's a difference between what they've experienced at the age of 20 versus when you get to 35.
Very meaningful and interesting poems here. So Shireen Sherard, thank you very much for sharing them on Lake Effect.
Thank you.
Shireen Sherard is a UW-Madison English professor and poet.